Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, today we're going to have a little celebrity corner edition of the episode.
We like this.
Yeah. And, you know, Anthony Bourdain, he passed away recently. A lot of our listeners probably were aware. You know, I was an Anthony Bourdain fan going back to No Reservations on the Travel Channel.
Yeah.
Great shows. Then he moved on to CNN and had Parts Unknown. Just really entertaining and great to see the different areas of the world and parts of the world. But unfortunately, you know, decided to take his own life.
He had a history of some drug and alcohol abuse and a history of depression. And that's unfortunate for somebody that we would think would have the world literally at on his lap, you know. And it was so sad to hear that.
Exactly. And now he's left behind, you know, an interesting estate situation. You know, because the death was so tragic and just so recent, not many details have come out regarding his estate planning. But there is one thing of note that I wanted to mention, and then we'll get into some kind of hypotheticals regarding his situation. You know, interestingly enough, at the time of his death, he was still married to Octavia Bugia.
Oh, I didn't know that he wasn't divorced.
He was not.
Because he had another girlfriend.
That's right. Yeah. He was separated from her and they were, you know, they were co-parenting. And so he just said being on the road so many days out of the year, you know, they just kind of grew apart and, but they still wanted to be there for, their daughter who was, age 11, Ariane, Bourdain. And so while they were separated, no formal divorce. And you mentioned, Ben, he did have a girlfriend, Asia Argento, who was an Italian actress. So he's got an interesting dynamic, going on there. And the first question was, when he passed,
did he have a will?
Well, before that, Ben, and this is a lot of times what happens with a number of our clients. What do we do about funeral arrangements? How does that work? And the short answer is that your number one up is who is in your health care power of attorney. So actually scratch that. The number one up is if you have a pre-need funeral arrangement.
Oh,
so
yeah,
if you've actually done something with, and this is North Carolina rules, by
but
the way.
But somebody has to know that.
That's right. Someone has to know. And if you have, here's the funeral home I've contracted with, here's what I want, here's what I want to happen, that is, and you designate someone to carry out your wishes, that individual is actually the first one up. The second one up is who you designate in your healthcare power of attorney. So that is, you know, during your life, if you're unable to make healthcare decisions, they're the ones who are going to make those. And then also in that power of attorney, it dictates that that individual has the right to you know, dispose of your remains.
And that's the last thing they would have the right
to.
That's
exactly right. Yeah. That's kind of their final duty, because then you're right. Once someone passes, we get an executor in charge of an estate, and then they would handle the individual's affairs from that point moving forward. In the event you didn't have a healthcare power of attorney, then we can get down the list, which would be if you had a will and you named an executor, that individual would qualify. But there's an issue there, because they have to qualify to be the executor. They're not automatically appointed. So there's a little bit of lag time there with regards to, you know, taking possession and custody and control of the remains and making sure to carry out the individual's wishes.
Now,
and then the last thing, Ben, just to kind of finish up, is your next of kin.
Well, that's where I was going. I would think that the wife would be almost, you would automatically turn to.
You got it. So they turn to the wife, and we have Anthony Bourdain's mother, Gladys, actually saying, although they're separated, she's in charge. So, and it seems to be amicable. There don't seem to be any issues there. But you can imagine, I mean, you can imagine the scenarios that you would have been where you would have a mother maybe wanting something done, you know, maybe, you know.
Now here's our hypothetical.
Yeah, maybe Tony said, hey, I want to be cremated. Or, you know, maybe Tony said, hey, I want to be buried here, to his mom. And then next thing you know, the spouse who's separated, mind mm-hmm. you, says, no, I want to do this, and this is what I want to do. I know that Tony was cremated, I believe. So mm-hmm. that kind of answered that question, but it's up to the spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you certainly could see a dynamic there where, spouse and maybe mother or parent, would be in conflict with one another just because this wasn't laid out,
mm-hmm.
The way that it would be nice to have, which is, you know, good estate planning documents.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you an example of my father. My father, when he died at age 67, he had expressed a long time before that how his disdain for cemeteries. Even though we would just spend summers going around to visit historic ones sometimes, mm-hmm. But he thought it was a waste of land. But he appreciated being cremated, too. However, after they moved to New Bern, he began to have an appreciation for his military service and the New Bern National Cemetery. So that's where he ended up being interred, but he didn't expressly say that.
Gotcha.
But my mom, his wife, made that decision.
Gotcha.
So there's an example of somebody who may have said one thing, but she was in charge.
That's exactly right.
So.
Exactly right. Then we get into, you know, whether or not Tony had a will
mm-hmm.
or not, you know, and if he didn't have a will, then the state of North Carolina, if he was a resident here, would dictate where his property is going to go. And because he was married at the time of his death, his spouse would be entitled to 50%
right.
of his estate, and his daughter would be entitled to 50% of his estate. So 50-50 split between wife and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, enter an issue here. Daughter is 11 years old.
Right.
So therefore, in order to get control of her 50% of the estate, there would need to be a guardianship put in place. Because the way this works, Ben, is that a minor's parent is the guardian of the person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that means that there's no reason for a guardianship for Arianne. Atavia is her mother, and therefore she will be the guardian of the person.
Right.
That being said, in order for a minor to have property,
mm-hmm.
there has to be a guardian who would be responsible for reporting the transactions to the court until she turns majority age, the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally, Atavia would need to petition the court for a guardianship, and it's an actual proceeding, and there's a hearing, and you have to notice up parties and go through the requirements of the statute. And then once she's ultimately appointed to be the guardian, she would then be responsible for filing annual accountings with the court
right.
until the minor child turns age 18.
Now, again, this is so new that these are hypotheticals.
These are hypotheticals. And so
what might happen.
So that's you know, for example, if Tony doesn't have a will, and again, North Carolina resident, we know he's not, but I'm just going to give
mm-hmm,
that
sure.
for our listeners. The next thing is that let's just say he had a will. Okay. And let's just say he wanted to leave everything to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that's just what he wanted. And so he leaves everything to his daughter, and presumably a good lawyer drafted the will. We have a trust, a trust under the will. It's mm-hmm. for someone to be in control of the funds. So we forego the guardianship that
right.
would be required if we were in the intestate scenario. And the interesting issue here, Ben, is that Atavia actually has spousal rights to
yes.
to the estate.
Right.
So therefore, under North Carolina law, she could claim a spousal allowance. And a spousal allowance is statutorily the first $30,000 of mm-hmm. property, tangible property, liquidity in the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, she would be entitled to file that within 1 year of Tony's death and would be entitled to the first 30. Interestingly enough, given Tony's stature, the spousal allowance, you can petition for an increased amount in mm. North Carolina.
Oh, really? Okay.
So in this example, you know, given the fact that he was, you know, doing fairly well on TV, mm-hmm. she could actually say, okay, well, he actually was bringing in more money than that. And so instead of the first 30, I want the first 300,000, mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. example, to be my spousal allowance. And in all honesty, a court would probably go along with it if she can show the factors and facts and circumstances
sure.
warranted. The other interesting thing here, Ben, is is her spousal right to claim an elective share.
Which could be even more.
In the estate, which
depending on
again,
how long they were married.
Exactly right. And they were married back in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been married for 11 years. So therefore they're at 33%. You're exactly right, Ben. So she's entitled to 33%. And this is not of the what we call the probate estate in
this
North Carolina.
It's everything.
Everything he had his hands on in any way, shape, or form, whether it's deemed to be a probate asset that passes under the will or whether it's a life insurance policy that had a beneficiary designation.
What about gifts to the girlfriend?
Gifts to the girlfriend come back, anything within 1 year. All that would come back into play with regards to her potential to claim an elective share against the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though, you know, individuals a lot of times think, well, I'll do my will. You know, I'm separated from my wife, no big deal. And I'm going to do my will the way that I want to do it. And I'm going to name who I want to name in my will to get my property. Big, huge hole in that plan is you have to plan around that elective share.
That's where trusts come in.
Otherwise, you know, you're just setting yourself up for that to be a challenge. And a lot of times, Ben, we hear from our clients and they say, you know, especially in a good relationship where we have a second marriage and we're, you know, leaving property to someone else. My spouse would never do that.
Yeah,
they would
right.
never make that claim. You know, here's Octavia.
Famous last
name.
Words.
She wouldn't make the claim.
And the check's in the mail.
She wouldn't make the claim against her daughter. You know, her daughter getting
right.
everything. There's no way. Well, you know, someone, now they're not here anymore. Tony's not here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot easier
for
someone
is.
To, exactly right, the money is. And it's a lot easier for someone to rationalize and say, yeah, I think I should go ahead and make that elective share.
Again, more reasons to plan. And you can make your planning too, through the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. You can give them a call or you can send Andrew an email too, afoster@harvellandcollins.com. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station. Talk about an upgrade on the immigration issue too next.